Moncrief on News Talk.
Even though we do hear a lot about ADHD nowadays, diagnosis rates are still relatively low in this country, and many don't discover that they have the condition until adulthood. A new book called Have I Got Your Attention? A Guide to Adult ADHD in Ireland has just been published. And here in the studio are the co-authors, Aileen Kennedy and Mike McGrath. Brian, good afternoon to you both.
Are you keeping?
Yeah.
How are you?
Okay, Aileen, let's start with you. You were originally a musician, as you understand it, and then kind of gave up that. At what point did you think something's different about me, or, you know, what were the circumstances in which you got your diagnosis?
Yeah, so for me, I always felt different from when I was conscious, I think. But I always kind of put it down to maybe being in a creative family and being musical. And, you know, I did struggle, I suppose, with my mental health. And they always say, you know, go for help or reach out and get that help. And I did. But, you know, ADHD didn't actually, they'd never mentioned ADHD until the age of 30. Mm. And then I was referred.
Were you diagnosed with other things before that?
Yeah, so depression, anxiety, PTSD, all these things. Yeah, even bipolar, which was completely inaccurate. So, yeah, pretty serious things, you know.
Yeah. And so going to get a diagnosis, did somebody eventually say to you, I think it might be ADHD, and go to see this person and they'll figure out if it is or not?
Yeah, exactly. So it was a psychiatrist that I was going to when I was 30. She referred me then. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And to get the diagnosis, what's that process? What happens?
So for mine, it can be different, but I suppose it follows similar kind of themes. So I had to be referred properly. And then it took me 2 years to actually make the appointment because I didn't want another kind of diagnosis that didn't really fit. But I spent those 2 years researching it, excuse me. And it just really, it checked out. I really thought this was accurate. So then I was officially diagnosed at 32. Mm. And, you know, it is a bit of a process. Like, you can't just walk in. It's not like collect 12 packet of crisps and get an ADHD diagnosis. Yeah. You know, it's not like that at all. You have to, be referred, or you have to go through quite a few different assessment stages.
Mm. And the eventual assessment to get the diagnosis, is that... do they sit down and talk to you? Do you have to fill out forms? What's that process like?
Yeah, great question. And actually, you know, it has to be present from childhood. So either a parent or a family member, someone who knew you as a child, they need to have their input at the same time. So there are like quite a lot of forms, which is kind of hilarious for ADHDers. But yeah, so in my case, my mum came with me and she had to answer kind of questions, you know, to do with the criteria of diagnosis for ADHD, and obviously score them then.
Yeah. And are there different sorts of ADHD?
Yeah. So look, I suppose officially you can be diagnosed as predominantly inattentive, predominantly hyperactive and impulsive, same thing, and combined, which is a combination of those previous two. So there's kind of three main subtypes, you know.
Okay, and what's yours?
Combined, so I've got it all.
Yeah, okay. And then when you got the diagnosis and you looked back on your life, were you then in a position to be able to say, that's why I acted that way in that situation, or that's why I am this way?
Yeah, absolutely. It just kind of, it helped me put everything back into place. And it was so helpful for me to put down the big shtick of giving out to myself and the self-criticism that I had honed so professionally and well for years. And I was able to say, oh, this isn't actually like a moral failing. It's not a character flaw. Yes, there's things I can work on, of course, but, you know, there's a whole neurobiological explanation.
Mm. And could you give us an example of what kind of things that previously you felt, you know, you were at fault for?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, I used to compare myself to my peers, you know, even my cousins who were quite high achievers, and, you know, they were able to do well in school and get really high marks. And I did well in the subjects that I liked, but like other things, like just it was very difficult. And I would compare myself to, you know, I would lose things or I wouldn't get the memo, so to speak. And I was forgetful and yeah, just loads of other things. And I was actually a very quiet child, but I would say the wrong thing at the wrong times. I would pick my moments. Yeah. and being like, oh dear, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but too late now.
Yeah. And so then when you got the diagnosis, do you then sit down with a consultant or someone who says, here's treatment, or, you know, because obviously it's something that's there. It's not like we're going to fix this. Here's a pill. So do they... Is there a combination of medication sometimes, plus also other sorts of therapies?
Yeah, exactly. So there's no one thing, you know, there's different treatments and management plans. Obviously, medication is one form of it. It doesn't work for everyone. There's ADHD coaching, which is what I actually work at now, and that's very helpful. And therapy that someone who's ADHD informed, all those things. And like, you know, change in lifestyle, looking at your environment, understanding your ADHD is kind of the key there to see where you can go from that.
Yeah. And in terms of change of lifestyle, what kind of changes would people generally need to make?
I mean, it can be anything as simple as hanging a hook at your front door to keep track of your keys to, you know, in my example, like stop drinking alcohol. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, start exercising and things like that. So there's loads of things.
Yeah. So as a coach then, what does an ADHD coach do?
Yeah, so I mean, I work mostly with adults in Ireland who have been late diagnosed, because that's the case here. And I help them, I suppose, to understand what that diagnosis means, how their ADHD shows up, and again, how to manage it and what to do going forward.
Mm. And would you be dealing with people who are distressed that they've got the diagnosis, especially because it's in adulthood?
Absolutely. I have people who I've met who... you know, in their 50s, and they haven't been able to tell a family member or even their spouse for, you know, worrying about the shame of it and the stigma. And again, they haven't processed and understood it themselves first. So they're worried that somebody else wouldn't be able to do that either.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Mike, how old were you when you got the diagnosis?
I would have been 31 when I was diagnosed as autistic. And at the recommendation of my autism specialist, I would have gone for a consult for ADHD, and I would have gotten the diagnosis at about 32 years of age. And just owing to, I suppose, the requirements that were there for me, I would have begun medication and treatment properly maybe the following year.
Okay, yeah. And so does the autism and the ADHD kind of intersect with each other? If you see what I mean.
The most recent studies, I think it's something like 60% of people one way or the other also display symptoms, for lack of a better term, or traits of the other. ADHD, I suppose, being the informal term for same. And there are commonalities, of course, like, again, monotropism / hyperfocus. But then there are very different aspects of it as well. Say, for example, you know, autism is seen as much as a social disability as anything else, whereas with ADHD, it's variations of attention and concentration. And, you know, those two things can be a bit of a halfpenny place when they kind of intersect.
Yeah.
You really want to do something, but you can't.
Yeah. And but obviously you were sent off to, you were recommended to go for a diagnosis of ADHD once you had the autism. So the obviously the consultant you were dealing with was thought there's something else going on here as well.
Because it was a case of like, I went and sought an autism diagnosis because I had grown up and gotten older around people who maybe had been diagnosed as kids. You know, adult or ADHD is not like an adult onset thing. Yeah. And so in seeing aspects of myself reflected in people that were openly living as autistic or ADHD, it was like, oh, the light bulb went on over my head. I do the flappies, or I lose focus and concentration. But, you know, I tend to hide that and stuff that down because, you know, I work in the media. So there was the whole thing of once the autism diagnostic process and post-diagnostic process of care was kind of done, they were like, we saw you kind of, you know, tapping out or zoning out a little bit more. Autism might answer most of your questions, but not necessarily all of them. We recommend you'd go for like a consult regarding ADHD. And if you don't feel it fits you, by all means.
But yeah.
By and large, the more a lot of people will make criticisms of people looking into things for themselves. And to be fair, you know, that was one of the big kind of criticisms that you know, resulted in us writing this book, being asked by ADHD Ireland and Merrion Press, you know, putting everything together that is evidence-based, but also based in people's experiences, people's lived experiences that they can see themselves in, but that there's also the base of evidence underneath it as well to do so. And yeah, I mean, in undergoing that process myself, going, yeah, that checks, you know. And by and large, you know, there it was, combined presentation ADHD diagnosis.
Yeah, and in terms of your treatment then,
yeah,
what were you prescribed?
So let's just say that my family has congenital health issues. So whereas a lot of medication, not all, would be on a stimulant basis, you know, that's not an option for everybody, mm-hmm. at least initially. So when my psychiatrist found, you know, in our conversations, etc., that there had been a history of heart issues in my family, she was very reluctant to prescribe stimulant medication in the first instance. So it was off to the Bonds in Cork to get a whole ECG and to wait the couple of months for that to come back, and then the other couple of months for the next appointment with the psychiatrist so that everything could be all clear. So it's not definitely, it's definitely not like a willy-nilly thing for sure. My psychiatrist, who recently retired actually, you know, recommended Concerta, which is a stimulant medication that kind of acts on a slow release basis over the course of the day. Take it at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, it would reach the limit of its effectiveness by maybe 6 o'clock. And that in combination with, much as Ailes was talking about there, you know, it's only one aspect or one, it's one face of it. It's one that people kind of tend to zoom in on a lot. But when you take it in tandem with, you know, therapy / counselling, if you take it in tandem with the receipt of, you know, ADHD coaching or coaching otherwise, again, facilitations and accommodations in your working environment, your college environment, your institutional environment, making changes at home to make things a bit more accessible or a bit more, you know, a bit more germane to your own head, I suppose, as well as things like diet and exercise. Like, I'm one of them terrible vegans, and I still have to stop myself from like comfort eating. As soon as I find sweets and potato that are like vegan friendly, I'll just gorge on those. There's nothing inherently healthy about the way that I live, but taking all of these things in their turn as the wider kind of scape of living as an ADHD person. Yeah, it is a significant change, but it's also, you know, the significant change that you need to make. And that does come in tandem with that better self-knowledge and the self-compassion and compassion for others that results, you know?
Yeah. Did you both find after you got your diagnosis that you would then have to tell people you had ADHD? And what kind of reactions would you have got?
Yeah. Well,
now you've written a book now, so you know, so you're out, and you're totally out and proud now. But prior to this,
yeah, it's so interesting actually, because you were very nervous about it. You don't know how people are going to react. As I said, like, it's a very vulnerable process. Like, I cried for a whole week after I was diagnosed, even though I knew, like, in my heart of hearts that, you know, this was correct. I was still shocked, and I was still. It was very vulnerable, you know, it's a very negative process. Like, it's not going through your strengths or how, you know, it's all the things you're terrible at. Yay. So, yeah, look, I was nervous to tell certain people. I'm so lucky, like, it's actually brought my family much closer together. We understand each other a lot more, which is amazing. And then I actually started an Instagram page, and that was the scariest thing ever. And I started that Instagram page to, you know, to talk about that, to talk about the, I suppose, the gap in understanding ADHD. And like, I didn't even know what ADHD was, and I lived with it for so long, you know, and now we're here talking about it. So.
Yeah, whereas
yeah
it was
Mike,
like,
is that the thing? Do people know what it is, or have a kind of a vague idea what it is?
I think people have the vague idea. I think it's rooted in a stereotype that doesn't necessarily, you know, serve anyone. And I think a lot of the kind of the contrarianism in the discourse around ADHD, sure, everyone's a little bit, or should they all getting diagnosed now, is kind of rooted in the fact that those long-held assumptions and stereotypes, which were rooted in turn in studies and research that were only made to sort, to benefit, you know, one kind of person with one kind of brain from one walk of life that happened to be predominant. And the more we know about the different presentations of ADHD and the different effects that they have, you know, you've met one person with ADHD, you've met one person with ADHD.
Yeah.
So to see how it manifests itself and creates challenges and opportunities in equal measure, et cetera, the wider the understanding is. And I think that's the one thing, I suppose, that's one big takeaway we want people to have from this book or from these conversations. It's a case of ADHD is no longer, you know, just about the young fella going up the walls in primary school. It's the young woman that is keeping it all inside for fear of getting overwhelmed and then letting it out late at night. Or it's the owl fella in his shed at home going all Toad of Toad Hall on his 17 hobbies. You know, there are so many ways and means in which ADHD presents itself in daily life. And I think, again, that wider knowledge, that wider awareness, and hopefully that wider shift to acceptance, you know, is making a difference.
Yeah. So many people have texted in. And the interesting theme here, got diagnosed at 48, got diagnosed when I was 27, got diagnosed 2 days before I was 50.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on that there's so many late diagnoses in this country?
I would say that it's kind of related to the same thing. Obviously, Aileen, you can speak to it a bit more eloquently than I can. But what I say is that when there's a wider knowledge, and again, that wider understanding of what ADHD is, when it's a more nuanced topic, when it moves away from stereotype, you then have people seeing it in others that they know, or they see it in media representations, and they'll go, yeah, this kind of makes sense. I'll go for a consult or so on and so forth. And then slowly but surely, because we, you know, because we know now what we know that we didn't know then, it's not so much that lots of people are suddenly turning up ADHD, you know. People aren't getting ADHD.
Yes.
You know, it's a case that we know a lot more about it now. More things are kind of flagging up, and as a result, a lot more people are aware of it, talking about it, and seeing themselves in it, or their medical professionals are seeing it too. Aileen, of course, you deal with that in a professional capacity. You could probably have been a lot less circuitous than I was, but if you want to kind of...
Yeah, Aileen, are you, like the people you deal with, have they had a similar path to you, that perhaps they've gone through various professionals who've diagnosed different things?
Yeah, many of them have. And then there are some people, actually, we interviewed Helen Steele, you know, she's the fashion designer and artist. And, you know, she was identified through, again, like her kids. And that's a big thing with, you know, some women or parents, they'll go along maybe with their child because obviously it's genetic. And they'll be like, oh my God, you know, that sounds very familiar.
Sure, I was that way and I ended up Grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, one texter wants to know, can I ask the female guest gave up alcohol, why they gave up alcohol? I'm recently diagnosed.
So I was wild and I didn't have an off lever, and I would never have said that I was alcoholic or anything, but it was addictive behaviour, and I had to do it like to socialise, and it was an outlet for certain type of hyperactivity that I had. And also I used to get performance anxiety as a working musician. But then, of course, the anxiety and depression after that, you know, the day after. And I would stay up all night as well. I would get, you know, there would be no off switch, as I said. So I've just found, for me personally, I wish I could enjoy an Owl Guinness. Like, I used to love Guinness, but it's never just one. Has to be, you know, several. So now I do that with chocolate. And yeah, that's a lot better, you know. Not less shame and fear
intuitive.
About that.
Intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, more humdrum question. Can you ask if an ADHD diagnosis affects life insurance?
Well, I recently... we bought a house recently and I was so worried about this, and I asked the broker about it and he said, not at all. The only thing that it could affect is like if you've had previous, like, you know, mental health issues. I had to be honest about that, and it did. It was a little bit more expensive, but not too much more expensive. But, you know, being honest, obviously, is probably better. But yeah, get advice for that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I was worried about that.
Somebody else wants to know, does it tend to be the case that women are underdiagnosed more than men?
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, yeah, look, it absolutely. Obviously, in Ireland, it's different. There are a lot of men who are being diagnosed as adults, but women, they present differently. Again, a lot of it can be very inattentive presentation. You know, we mask a lot more. Women and girls are socialised a little bit differently. And you have to, you know, fit in and be quiet and, you know, but sure, you leave it out later on. And then obviously there's a hormone interaction as well. So, you know, menstruation will affect your ADHD traits. And so women who are going into perimenopause or menopause, their ADHD traits will actually be a lot more severe. So women are getting diagnosed at that age too.
Okay, yeah. The But would you be fair to say you both felt some relief when you got your diagnosis, that it helped your life make more sense?
Oh, hugely. I mean, going from my diagnoses, it was the pivot from getting up in the morning and looking at yourself in the mirror and going, why am I like this? To, this is how things are. Here are my internal factors, you know, what's going on with my own personal needs. Here are the environmental factors that are kind of aggravating this stuff. How can I change it? How can I advocate for myself and talk to people, you know, in my community, in my work, in my family, etc., about how this kind of presents itself. And the knowledge and the, you know, the self-understanding that comes from that is a piece that we've talked about an awful lot, but it can't be stressed. You know, it's definitely not a silver bullet for sure for life, but having that little bit of extra knowledge, that little bit of extra structure around you, and that ability to navigate it more, knowing what way the odds are. Some people might be familiar with the meme of the video game is harder, but only because everyone else had the manual. Now you have it. It doesn't get any easier, but you can strategize.
Yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, somebody else makes a very interesting point. Many parents are in denial when it's suggested to get their kids tested. Every class now has fidget boxes on every table, and kids get taken out on movement breaks all the time. Worth chatting to teachers during the summer holidays. There may be a bit of that, that, you know, you don't want to say, you know, you don't want to label your child. So, you know, there's a tendency to ignore that.
My counter to that would be, you know, if you could look at yourself in the proper context, if you always had questions about things about yourself that you couldn't explain, and it was getting to a point where, you know, you couldn't cope anymore, where it was really negatively affecting your quality of life or the way that you navigated the world. And, you know, not in a, you know, an overly comprehensive or lovey-dovey way, but just in the case of if you thought that you could, you know, go to a mental health professional, etc., and discuss this, talk through your experiences, you know, get referred to a professional, all of this, and it led to the conversation about this is autism, this is ADHD, etc. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you give yourself the gift of the vocabulary and the knowledge to understand yourself, to have a bit more compassion and empathy for others, and to understand not only your own challenges, but then to have empathy for the challenges that others face. And it's not just applicable, obviously, to neurodivergence, it's everything. I just think, you know, oh, I don't want to label someone. But it's a case of like, okay, you'd rather leave them in the dark? That's my counter argument to it anyway.
Somebody says, I'm a 54-year-old man. I've suspected I have ADHD. Is there a point in getting a diagnosis? As I've heard, medication doesn't have an effect as you get older.
Well, I have clients who are in their 60s, and I have a wonderful client at the moment, and he was diagnosed at 64, I think he was. And he's coming to me for help on how to, you know, keep living, and loads of goals, loads of plans. So it's been fantastic for him for the same reasons as us. You know, it's validating, and it explains a life of maybe confusion and self-beration. But it's a very personal choice. You know, it's up to you if you think it'd be worth it. Like, if you keep hearing about it, you know, and look, medication is a choice as well. Like, he can go for the diagnosis just for his own peace of mind, or just some semblance of an explanation. Yeah. It's his choice, you know.
Yeah. Claire is texting and wondering about phone use.
Oh,
that's not, I mean, that's not good for any of our brains, really.
Yeah. That could be anything, though, if you're really into something, or if there's something that would have seized on your attention span regardless. Now, obviously, social media is kind of the archetype of something that is expressly engineered to grab you by the frontal lobe and milk it for everything that you can have. And it is an exemplar of that. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, Ailes, you can speak to the, you know, the intersection between how ADHD brains function, especially with seeking stimulation, seeking dopamine, etc., and the various Skinner boxes in the world, not just social media, but things like, you know, gamified or microtransactions, loot boxes in video games. Even, bloody hell, I saw a dude once before, he was addicted to scratch cards. You know, it's not necessarily something you consider, but anything that kind of gives you that rush and you keep chasing that particular dragon is going to happen. And there are complications that present as far as variances in attention and in neurochemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we're extra susceptible to it, I guess, especially if it's interesting. Like, I mean, so many of us are like glued to our phones. It's very stimulating. It's how a lot of us maybe work and interact with each other. You know, it is, it's very high reward. You know, that's a human thing. But obviously, it doesn't mean that you have, like, it's not just a symptom of ADHD.
Yeah, but no, I suppose maybe, I think what the way she meant it, the way you said that, you know, when you had your diagnosis, you realize alcohol doesn't really agree with me. And by the same token, people with a diagnosis might think I should stay off social media and phones for the set for
absolutely
for similar reasons. It is heritable, is it? I mean, if you get a diagnosis, can it have been in your family?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I would start the kind of the because Lisa's texting and saying the same thing, and now they seem to be playing a speculation game as to, you know, who had it before.
Or
who gave it to who? Do you find yourself spotting it in people who maybe don't have a diagnosis yet?
I try and resist that urge because I know everybody has their own story and you don't know what people have been through, and you see one facet of a person in the context in which you deal with them, and it's very easy to slip into the, sure, look now, or they're a little, or this, that, or the other peer diagnosis. And, you know, if you've seen it in yourself, you might readily recognize it in others, but not everyone is on that same step of the journey as you are. So me personally, it's a case of like, if I kind of feel that way about somebody, like it might inform how I approach them. I'm not going to be openly going, do you know, you might be ADHD. But the whole thing of like seeing it in others does kind of inform, seeing in others what you see in yourself will inform your kind of approach in that regard.
Yeah.
And that's something I find myself having to keep in check anyway. I don't know about you.
Yeah. And the book, now, obviously it's for people who might already have it, or the family members who might already have that a diagnosis. If you're wondering, might this be a help? If you're wondering, do I have it?
It's for everyone.
Yeah.
It's for everyone. Yeah. ADHD or not. We got ADHD Ireland and the Merriam Press asked us to steward this project. Myself as a former and future journalist, and Aileen as an ADHD life coach. We had, you know, the experience put together to put a structure on something like this. And that's what we did. We spent much of December 2024 cogitating over what would eventually end up being the book, which is put it into three separate pieces and have each step of the journey independently, not just in terms of like a chronology or something you can read from front to back, but that it can be kind of dipped in and out of as necessary. And that page layout, things like box outs, bolding of words, etc., can help draw the eye toward things that people might be looking for specifically when scanning over a page. So, you know, in the writing of the book, here's a classic ADHD moment. Can you repeat the question, please?
Well, I suppose that, no, you didn't answer the question. The question was, you know, is it for people who are just considering
if you think you might, you know, obviously we're not doctors. Go talk to your medical professionals and see what the options are in front of you. We wrote from our own experiences and from the experiences of the interviewees that we had. We consulted with GPs, psychiatrists, so that we weren't just kind of spoofing and coming off the top of our domes. We mix a readily available evidence base that goes back decades with our own personal experiences, the experiences of our interviewees, the inputs and the intercessions of the medical professionals that guided us along with this. And we hope that we've created something that, in an age where there's so much noise around any topic that comes up, at a time when there's so much uncertainty in the public discourse, things like AI search results, things like disinformation on social media, that if we could put together the most concise but also the most human resource that we possibly could, with everything from the very, very basics of ADHD to navigating things like the HSE or the private system in Ireland, all the way up to, like, you know, what are your rights under the Equal Status Act, you know, in an Irish workplace or in an Irish institution, as well as, you know, the cultural context of, like, ADHD versus the talking points of the Irish mammy, you know, all of the misgivings and the way that they find their way into the conversation, and, you know, just kind of answering them really and giving people the information they need to kind of discuss it a bit more confidently in the different context that presents.
Yeah. Are there advantages? Because, you know, the way ADHD, the D is for disorder. Like, are there advantages to being neurodivergent?
I'll let Aileen take that, but I will say that, you know, taking the social model of disability, people are only as disabled or disordered as the system that disables and disorders us. And a lot of the things that present and a lot of the quote unquote problems that come up as a result are simply because of like the rigidity of the system in that respect. I know lots of people want to say ADHD is a superpower, but they're not looking at the person that's burnt out after a day of putting their best face on as well. Ailes, you obviously encounter that an awful lot in your...
Yes, there are many, many strengths. So for every lack of focus and difficulty with focus, there is a hyper focus. And people with ADHD will understand this. So if you're really interested in something and, you know, you're able to really, really zone in and like sometimes, I mean, sometimes it can be detrimental. You forget to eat or whatever. But, you know, there's a lot that if you can harness that, and you know, it's amazing. Creativity can be very linked to neurodiversity, and you know, because you're thinking a little bit differently and you're thinking outside the box, and you might spot patterns that maybe other people mightn't spot. And you know, there's justice sensitivity as well, where people with ADHD seem to be a bit more in tune with unfairness and, you know, getting more passionate about unfairness. Mike is a perfect example of embodying that.
I just think it's a case, again, it's that social model of disability. If the system doesn't change, if awareness doesn't move to acceptance, you know, because what benefits one person is ultimately going to benefit everybody. You look at the things that we take for granted now that began as mobility aids, things like glasses, things like electric toothbrushes, things that would not have struck you as a disability aid in terms of physical disability that you now take as part of everyday life. And it's just to get, it's just the process of advocacy, the process of speaking up and talking about the different ways and means in which the challenges that autistic and ADHD people face and bringing it into the wider conversation and making that change happen.
Yeah. Thank you both very much for coming in to talk with us today. The name of the book is Have I Got Your Attention? A Guide to Adult ADHD in Ireland. The authors are Aileen Kennedy and Mike McGrath-Bryan.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.